Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. Few, if any, people have more influence on the sound of popular music today as Ryan Tedder, a singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, and producer. And as the frontman for One Republic, Tedder has helmed the genre-bending Colorado-based band for more than a decade, enjoying platinum sales and a 2009 Grammy nomination as the band rose from MySpace to MTV and beyond. Tell me that you need me, then you go and cut me down. But wait, you tell me that you're sorry, didn't think I'd turn around and say, hey, now it's too late to apologize. It's too late. Said it's too late to But Tedder is also known for his keen ear, having written and produced for a who's who of the music business, including Adele, Jennifer Hudson, Beyoncé, Daughtry, and many others. If you've heard Adele's song Rumor Has It, for example, you've heard Ryan Tedder at work. Now rumor has it she ain't got your love anymore. Rumor has it. But lately, Tedder's focus has been back on One Republic, whose new album Native is out now from Interscope. It's a mix of harmonies and dance beats, arena choruses, and introspective lyrics. Ryan Tedder, welcome to the Roundtable.
Hey, how's it going?
I wanted to start by asking, do you get nervous on the eve of the release of a new album?
Man, I think I did on our last album. Not so much on this album. Maybe I should be, but it's, you know, when out with albums leaking ahead of time and so many different territories putting out albums before even they come out in the U.S., you kind of get a feel for the overall reception in these kind of odd gradual steps. And so it's kind of alleviated any sense of dread that I have. And to be honest, I've been in 8 countries in the last 10 days on 3 continents. So I'm kind of just going so hard, so fast, that it doesn't really give me time to be too nervous.
And you recorded the album all over the place too, right?
Yeah, we sure did. Yeah, man. We just kind of find studios wherever we can, when we can. And that may be Sydney one day. It might be Seattle the next, and L.A. or Greece. I mean, it's just kind of wherever we are.
Why do you do it that way?
It's as much necessity as it is, intent. For me, I have a fundamental belief in capturing the energy of a city, the excitement, and sometimes even the sound. Like on the opening track on the album, Counting Stars, we recorded in Santorini in Greece, and we actually shot a behind-the-scenes video for how the song was done on YouTube. And we ended up incorporating a local Grecian Celtic harpist. She plays the harp and plays accordion, and it's not a harp-heavy song by any stretch of the imagination, but you will hear, going into the choruses, you'll hear this, you'll hear that kind of harp strum, and you'll hear the accordion in the background kind of pulsating throughout the song. Everything that drowns me makes me wanna fly. I've been losing sleep, dreaming about the things that we could. You know, that never would have happened had we not been there. Stuff we did in Paris, stuff we did in London. We incorporate the local, Adele's background singer actually on Counting Stars is singing all over that. And she happened to be in London while we were there. So things work out.
Do you go searching for those kinds of collaborations, or is it something where they find out you're in town, next thing you know, you've got the local harp player showing up?
It's last minute for me. I mean, my whole MO on life is run and gun, basically. You know, not to suggest that I do stuff in a sloppy manner, but I roll with it. I just kind of roll with it. We're here. Hey, why don't we make this happen? Okay, let's do it. The worst thing that could happen is somebody says no. That's what my philosophy in life is. Like, the worst thing that could happen is that it doesn't happen. You know what I mean? So we just kind of come up with ideas off the cuff. I think they feel a lot more, you know, that's a lot more interesting to me too, because it's, you know, you end up with unintended accidents sometimes that make for the best songs.
How does the songwriting actually work for you in One Republic? Because obviously these are often very technical songs. There's a very deep amount of sonic stuff happening. Yeah. So that seems like it would run counter to the idea of, hey, we're here and let's hit record.
Well, so it's kind of a combination of both. I mean, I'm always thinking in my head of exactly what parts I want. So for instance, I would never just bring in a musician, no matter how good they are, and just say, okay, I'm going to hit record and you just play to your heart's content. I mean, I've done that in the past. It's occasionally you come across something that is more of an old school style of recording, and you know, I've done that too, where two or three days jamming on the same song to try and work it out and then work out the kinks and then end up with something, you know, really unique. That works too. But as you said, the production level on these albums, on this album in particular, runs very deep. There's a ton of like subterranean movement and notes and instruments and subdivided rhythms that are happening in a lot of these songs, and that some of them take weeks and weeks, man, on one song. So the writing process itself is very off the cuff. It's very, because there's writing a song and then there's producing a song, and to me they're apples and oranges. And every now and then you get lucky and you happen to hit record, and whatever the demo is or whatever you're doing just captures a magic, and you can't beat it, and you just say, you know what, that's the final, we're just going to keep that. But more often than not, I'll go back, because I'm always second-guessing, so I'll go back in and try and find room for improvement in any way, shape, and form I can on every song. That doesn't always mean just stacking and stacking production. Sometimes it means taking away and stripping.
So is there a tension in you in the way you approach a song from a producing standpoint and also as maybe the writer of a song? I mean, are you writing like on an acoustic guitar and hearing all of those arrangements as it's going? Or do you come into the studio and say, you know, I want to try X, Y, and Z on this track in specific?
So it's kind of all the above. On some of the songs, Feel Again, If I Lose Myself, we had the songs before we had the sound dialed in. And so we had to, I mean, it was very arduous. There were days where I was just honestly, you know, not enjoying the process. And then you have to push through, to get where you're going, to be honest. There were days where I'd show up at 10:30 in the morning. I'd leave at 7:30 at night, and I would barely have anything to show for it other than a bunch of ways to not finish that song, you know? But that's what you have to do. And when you're searching for a new sound, it takes a lot longer, because it would have been easy to just make each song, let's dial it up and make it sound like One Republic and the stuff we've done before, and let's phone it in, and maybe it'll work. But that's not exciting, to be honest. It's not exciting at all. And I couldn't stomach that. I'd rather swing hard and miss entirely attempting to do something that we've never done than just keep rehashing a formula that works for us. So, you know, you just flip through the first three songs on the album and you'll kind of scratch your head going, "This, wow, how is this the same band?" I think functionally, I think it's better. I just do. I think it's 3.5 years of absorbing music and me, you know, writing for a ton of other people and incorporating lessons I've learned from all that stuff into the One Republic album.
So you've sort of led me to the next question, which is, when is something One Republic music and when is it something you'll give to another artist?
Well, very rarely do those two things intersect, primarily because I do work with a lot of female artists. So therein lies kind of a, you know, the disparity or the separation between what would be One Republic and or not. You know, I couldn't, I would not have sang, I wish I could have sang Rumor Has It. That's such a cool song. I wouldn't have sang it. You know, B.O.B. is so good. I'm not a rapper, so I'm not going to pull that off. And you know, Maroon 5, I have their upcoming single, Love Somebody, and I love that song. I love the track. I love the melody. It's uniquely Adam. It's uniquely them. That song could go on and be a huge hit on those guys, and it wouldn't be the same on One Republic. People wouldn't understand it coming from us, if that makes sense. And he owns it. It's a rare occasion that there's a song that I write for somebody else and my band hears it and says, wait a minute, you got to keep that. You know, we do have one song on the album. It's called Can't Stop. I wrote it for somebody else originally. The band convinced me to take it back and keep it. And then I couldn't figure out how to finish it. So I reached out to Jeff Basker, who produced and wrote We Are Young and Some Nights. You know, he did the whole Fun album, and then he did Kanye West's last two albums. Reached out to him, and I said, dude, I got this song. I think you were the only guy left that I know that could possibly interpret this the right way. We sent him the song, and about a month later, he sent me back his first draft, and then he and I went back and forth for about 2 weeks and finished it. And I couldn't be happier with how it turned out. It's the weirdest, like, darkest song on the album, but it might be one of the biggest. That's the only time in the history of the band that there's been a song that was intended for somebody else that ended up becoming a One Republic song.
You know, anyone who's played in, you know, the garage can point to jealousies that come about in bands, especially if one of the members is, you know, writing with other people, recording with other people. For you, it seems like that aspect is even bigger than the One Republic time nowadays. And I wonder how you've balanced that relationship just on a human level.
On a human level, I insist that nothing that I do outside of One Republic takes away from our time as a band, whether it's tours, shows, press, interviews. Like, for instance, I would never have not done this interview so I could go in the studio with, you know, another artist, go do something with, you know, Gavin DeGraw or something like that. I love Gavin, but, you know, I mean, I'm not... You have to draw a line in the sand. And I promised the guys from the beginning, I said, if you guys never complain, if you don't bitch to me about me working with so-and-so or having a song out with so-and-so, then I will never let that interfere with what we're doing. I won't cancel stuff. I won't move stuff around. I will. So if I work on other things and if I have to pull double duty. So, much to the chagrin of my sleep, I end up, a lot of the time that they might spend, the band might spend hanging out, watching Netflix or just whatever, doing whatever they want to, I'll land, we'll fly in from I flew in from Vienna last night, landed in New York, along with the whole band. They went to the hotel and hung out, relaxed. I went straight to the studio. So that's kind of how I balance it. I keep it very, just very encapsulated, separate from the band. And I work a lot on airplanes. I do a lot of programming and songwriting on airplanes and in transit to various places.
What makes you such a good collaborator, do you think?
Honestly, that comes down to personality. I mean, artists, you know, other artists could probably answer that better than I could, ones that have worked with me. But I'd like to think at this stage of my life, I'm relatively disarming with when I get in the room with an artist. And I've been doing it for so long, I am an artist. That's part of it. So, you know, I go in, it doesn't matter how big the artist is, I can relate to them on just about any level. And so I get it when they're tired because from a day of promo or from a video shoot, or their voice is shot because they went out last night with the label and had one too many drinks. There's very little that an artist has done that I couldn't connect with or relate to. And I think that because I'm an artist, they see me as a, you know, more as just like one of them. And so it's disarming. And, you know, and I'm actually pretty much a goofball. In reality, I just love cracking jokes, and I'm very irreverent. So I think that also helps them, you know, relax.
Who haven't you worked with that you'd like to?
I would love to collaborate with you too, which is it's a hard nail to peg, but it's doable. They're one of my, you know, biggest inspirations as a band, and we've toured with them, and I feel pretty confident we'll tour with them again in the future. And that would be kind of like, that's a bucket list thing for me, is to write the song, have anything, any type of musical contribution to a U2 album. Paul McCartney, I don't even really need to explain why that would be amazing, but that would be bucket list item number two. And then Peter Gabriel would probably be number three. You know, these are all older artists, but you know, there's newer artists that I love, Emily Sandy and Mickey Echo, but as luck would have it, they're a little bit easier to negotiate getting in a studio with than Sir Paul McCartney. So, you know, you always want to share the room with one of your idols. So for me, those would be my top three.
Tell me about the name of this album, Native. It's funny because you obviously recorded this all over the place, and you told us how, you know, you're often writing and producing in the air. What does the term Native mean to this album?
Native means familiar and local, and we are in so many countries all the time that I live in Denver, and there's parts of this album that, to me, I sonically hear the fact that that we're a Colorado band. There's parts of this album to me that you know, sound like Russia. I mean, Greece, Spain. So, you know, given the etymology of that word, native, you know, familiar and local, we, for whatever reason, I think just by God's grace and luck, have been lucky enough to connect globally on a level that I always hoped but never quite believed would happen. Because it's hard, especially for American bands. It's one thing to be a pop artist, you know, to be, not to take away from what they do, but if you're Rihanna, if you're, Bruno, Kesha, they're all very different artists, but the world of just of straight ahead pop, it seems to be a little bit more inviting on a global scale, and bands always have a hard go at it for me. I mean, from my perspective, they have a year or two where they connect, and then, and for whatever reason, they're the hottest thing in the world for a year or two, and then it goes away. And I could name a dozen bands from the '90s that, you know, that fall into that category, and so on and so forth. And you know, we've never wanted to be that. Part of the reason I switch up the sound so much of this band and is we never want to fall into a rut or start to rehash the same formula. And I think when we travel all these countries, the fans there, you know, we are native to them. You know, the music is native to them. It feels familiar. It feels local. It feels like we're their band. I mean, our Polish fans would swear that we're their band, and our German fans, and, you know, the South African fans. And so the irony is that we've named the album Native, because it's native to about, you know, a dozen different places and not to any one place. And the word just kind of took on a bunch of meanings for us. And, you know, we loved it.
You were talking just a moment ago about the state of rock bands getting, you know, a 1 or 2 year arc. You know, is rock music in trouble for the future? As you listen to this album, it's a different kind of rock.
Yeah,
you know?
It's a different kind. Rock has changed. I think the term as you know it today, all right, for instance, like Fun is considered a rock band, which by, let's say, you know, 16-year-old, we have a pretty similar fan base, One Republic and Fun, and their fans would consider them a rock band. And same with Imagine Dragons. And I'm fans of both of those bands. I think they're both phenomenal, and what they're doing just for the state of bands in the world today is awesome. But then I'm just old enough now. Now, a 16-year-old might hear that and say, that's rock, you know. But obviously, for anyone whose musical understanding goes back prior to the year 2000, we're all kidding ourselves if we're claiming to be quote unquote traditional rock bands. I mean, you know, there are moments of it. Radioactive is edgy and has a rock vibe to it. And Fun has some records, and we have a song on our album called Light It Up that's as rock as, you know, we've ever done. But the reality is, rock as we know it, like from the 90s, you know, heavy distorted guitars, or even more recently, some of the harder rock American acts, Chris Daughtry's a friend of mine, phenomenal singer, very much a rock act. That era or style, when it comes to just hard, you know, overdriven guitars, for whatever reason, has cycled out, and it's just cyclical. I don't think it's dead. I think the word I'd use is hibernation. It's in hibernation, and without question, I think in the next 5-7 years, it'll cycle back. You'll have all it takes is one band. You'll have one band that comes out of nowhere with a song that's like crazy distorted guitars and edgy vocals, and all of a sudden, rock is back, and people will be declaring them the savior of rock. But the titles, I think, disappeared when album purchasing disappeared and playlist purchasing emerged, because now your average, you know, iTunes person or person that uses iTunes will go on and on a given playlist, whether you're 26, 36, or 16, you might have MGMT, Fun, Katy Perry, Temper Trap, Muddy Waters, and maybe One Republic, maybe, you know, Imagine Dragons, Emily Sandy. You see where I'm going with it. It's we live in a playlist culture now, and it's about diversity, and it's about, you know, not just being into one thing. That's not cool. You know what I mean? It's not cool anymore. And so I think that's where rock has gone. It's gone into hibernation. That form of rock has gone into hibernation, and the reality is, you either evolve your sound or you die. And That's been the way with music from day one. And you've got the pioneers of that, bands like U2, like the Beatles, that were on the tip of the spear and constantly evolving, even at the risk of completely failing. And I think that's the only way to do it.
Ryan Tedder is the frontman for One Republic, whose new album, Native, is now out from Interscope Records. Ryan, it's been a real pleasure to speak with you, and good luck with the album and all your travels.
Great, thanks so much.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.